Today's guest was last on in May 2013. For the life of me, I can't understand why I didn't call him again, because that interview was a great interview about his business. He's an attorney, Bart Merrill, construction, business, and real estate law. And we talked a lot about that. And today, something a little different. I received I created a new little saying. Are you... are you in Montecito? Are you in a wind tunnel right now, Bart?
No, I'm in Carpinteria, a little bit of heaven.
A little bit of heaven and a little bit of wind. It sounds like I feel like I'm interviewing Geraldo Rivera in that scene in The Hurricane where he's standing there being blown away. We're getting a bad wind noise to try to do a headwind. You know anything about sailing?
No, I'm trying to get to a calm spot, but...
Good. Thank you. So... Bart Merrill, first of all, welcome back to Radio Real Estate.
Well, good to be here.
Good to be here. Now, your legal name, which you use, is Barton.
Yes.
Now,
but nobody calls me that.
Nobody, but that's what you have on your tagline.
That's true.
And did you have anything to do with the movie Barton Fink?
I wish I did. That made a good profit.
So I've referenced this, and I don't mean to be cute about a horrible situation, but I said earlier you're coming on to talk about a new debris flow, the perils of a new debris flow, and that debris consists of shyster contractors, your words, and insurance companies who are seeing a big shortfall in insurance money to effectuate the scope of construction required. So tell me what you see and why you're in a position to see it.
Well, really, I mean, everybody knows the horror and the disasters of the fire, the one in Montecito or Carpinteria, everywhere around the Southland, and then the latest one out in Goleta, then followed up with the debris flows that happened. And many individuals that were my clients, homeowners, had dramatically underinsured their properties. And FEMA has helped out to a minor degree. But really what's happened is these folks are looking at repair costs that greatly quadruple their insurance of money. And so they're looking at contractors that are, in my mind, shysters. They go in there and they say, I can do this job for X number of dollars, and the people hire them, and they not only cannot do the job for X number of dollars, primarily what they end up doing is taking the money and running. And it's a pitiful situation for a lot of homeowners in the Southland.
And contractors and people dealing with catastrophes such as this, they come out of the woodwork with the sole intention of defrauding.
Absolutely. And, you know, I just had a client come to me on Thursday or Friday last week, and the contractor said he would do the job and everything would be hunky-dory, and he got two-thirds of the way through and then called her up last week and said, I don't have any money to pay the subcontractors, so you're going to have to pay them, and I don't know when I'm going to be able to come back to finish your house. That's not something a homeowner that lost, you know, the home in a fire or a flood needs to hear. It's a bad situation, and the problem is these small-time guys, they just walk away. They take the money from the homeowner, and they're gone. And they, you know, unless you follow up as a homeowner to try and get retribution through the contractor state license board, those guys are going to do it again. They're just going to keep taking advantage of the most vulnerable people in the Southland.
And they're coming in, you feel, with quotes that are not sustainable.
They couldn't possibly build the project for the amount of money that they're proposing. The problem is that a homeowner doesn't know that. They are the innocent victim here who says, oh, well, gosh, I've gotten a lot of quotes here that are, you know, almost double your price, and you can get this done. And, you know, they go to the extra level even of checking them out on the contractor state license board. They're licensed. But then, you know, what most homeowners do not do, unfortunately, is ask for a big body of references to tell them, hey, this guy built my house properly at the cost he said he was going to build it. So these people don't do that, and in the end, they get hit badly by these guys that are just, as I see them, evil doers.
My guest, local attorney Bart Merrill, focusing on construction, business, and real estate law in Santa Barbara. Now, you mentioned, of course, sometimes you go online and you find out these people are licensed, but you might not ask for a lot of references. And if you find out they're licensed, if you're going on to that site, would you then see at that same site whether or not there have been complaints?
Yes. The formal complaints that are filed against them show up. There's a special little bracket down at the bottom of the company's profile that will show that. But that doesn't tell you whether or not the license was ever effectuated by that particular complaint. What you need to do is take the further step of asking that contractor, tell me the last two or three jobs you worked on. I'd like to call the homeowner.
And of course,
usually those guys won't give that information. They fall back. Well, you know, I keep my client list private, and I don't. If people aren't willing to give you references, you should not hire them.
And what about the one who's so surreptitious that they give you false references? Does that happen?
Well, it could happen, but the knowledgeable and insightful homeowner is going to call those people.
Call those people, make sure that they are actually the owners of a property,
right?
You know, that it really happened. And, yeah, you know, you're under the gun, you lost your home, you lost everything, and unfortunately it comes out to the adage, what's too good to be true is probably not true.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, a lot of these folks, I had to give a recent client, a real bad story. He had flood insurance in Montecito. And you would think, wow, complete coverage for a flood. But it had an exclusion in the policy that said if the flood is caused by a fire, there is no coverage. Well, everybody knows that the floods in Montecito occurred because the entire hillsides above the homes had been denuded. And so the insurance company just used that as an excuse. And now that poor gentleman's looking at FEMA to see if they'll help rebuild his $7 million home.
Now that's an interesting point, because the is it inverse of that was that people who didn't have flood insurance, I thought, could turn around and say, well, you know what, I have fire insurance, and really this was all caused by the fire, so now you're obligated to insure me from the resulting flood, even though I didn't have flood insurance. And I thought that was happening. Have you seen that?
It did initially. But then I think the governor and the insurance department stepped in and said, no, you're covering this. The flood would not have happened but for the fire.
So they did save those people.
Yeah, most of the larger reputable companies, and I don't want to drop names because, you know, then the other good ones would say, hey, how come you didn't mention me? But there are a lot, the big name companies out there that offer fire insurance looked at what happened and said, you know what, it's way cheaper for us to pay this loss than it will be to litigate all these losses out here. We're not going to win.
Now,
the government and the insurance company is saying, no, that's, you got to cover these people.
So for your client that had flood insurance but it had an exclusion saying if it was caused by fire, they wouldn't cover it, was the subsequent decisions made by the state able to turn that around for that particular client?
He has not come back to me, and I assume no is the answer. I actually referred him to a law firm that is litigating a lot of the claims that come up because the smaller insurance companies are saying what you spoke of at first, where, oh, the fire didn't cause this, it was a flood, and, you know, we're not going to do it. We're not going to cover it.
Right.
So there's a lot of litigation going on about that. Nothing that I'm involved in. I mean, I end up referring them to those firms. But it's been a horrible mess for a lot of people in Montecito. And they look at this and go, well, why? I bought insurance. Most of them were underinsured, though. I will say that that's been the single biggest problem for most of the folks out there, and that's where the contractor scams have been coming in. But I will say the Contractor State License Board, they're in Montecito. They drive around. They're looking for those guys. So it's going to be a cleansing time for the bad contractors of this city and county.
So for your example about the one client who had a contractor two-thirds of the way through the job, and then he called her and said, look, I can't afford to pay the subcontractors. You got to pony up, and by the way, I'm too busy. I don't know when I'm going to come back and finish. That's the kind of guy that they go after?
They will go after that guy. The bad part for my client is that the subcontractors, even though they don't have agreements with the homeowner, as long as they file the proper paperwork, what's known as a 20-day preliminary notice, and serve that to the homeowner and the bank or whoever is financing it, they can sue the homeowner directly for the amounts of money that the homeowner already paid the general. Now you've got to pay a second time to the subcontractor.
And they could put a lien on the property?
A mechanics lien.
Mechanics lien?
Yep.
I'm trying to remember. I just can't believe you were on 5 years ago, Bart. It seems like yesterday. And I remember after the interview thinking, this guy's got to come on at least once a year. But I kind of remember this conversation, and that seems, because you want to protect subcontractors, they have rights, but how do they get to basically bill twice, the poor homeowner?
Well, the thing is, they didn't bill the homeowner twice. They billed the general contractor once, and he took the money and ran.
I understand.
So the homeowner is looking at this, and what they are supposed to do, the homeowner, and they don't, most of them don't know this, is that when you get an invoice from a general contractor, and it's got subcontractor invoices with it, that invoice should be accompanied by a conditional waiver and release form that says, once I get paid, I will give you an unconditional waiver and release. It's a paperwork trail that allows the homeowner to make sure that the money is paid out to the subcontractors. But what happens is that they give the conditional waiver and release, and then the general disappears after he got the big payment. Usually it's in the latter stages of construction where there's not a lot to be done, and he's taken big money and running, or, just saying, I'm not doing it. And you go ahead and report me. Go ahead and do whatever you want. But most of these guys, if you sue them, they haven't got anything. They can't afford to hire an attorney, and they're not going to even try and defend themselves. And so they get judgments taken against them. They don't care. And the homeowner's stuck paying attorney fees and the subcontractor to get a piece of paper that's worthless.
Well, thanks for cheering me up. This is just the most horrible news.
I say that, and I will say that 90% of the contractors and subcontractors I deal with in the Santa Barbara, Ventura, San Luis area are very reputable. And it's only the shysters out there. And it's only happening in situation, not only, but primarily happening in situation where homeowners are desperate to get their home back.
Wasn't there some law passed recently, and recently it could be the last 10 or 15 years, that stipulated, how sometimes when there's catastrophes, prices can get jacked up. It could be for water at the local store, gasoline. Does that law have anything, any umbrella covering this?
No.
Because you just...
It's almost inverse with construction, because the homeowner is already struggling. They don't have enough insurance money, and they've got some money, and they can get a home loan to do the work, or maybe they can't, and it's just coming out of their retirement savings. But they're the ones that are the most vulnerable, and they seem to be the ones that don't do the homework necessary to find out whether or not the shyster is on the loose against them. It's horrible.
My guest, Bart Merrill, a Santa Barbara attorney dealing with construction, business, and real estate law, talking about the unfortunate circumstances following the Montecito fire debris flow and rebuilding. So your example, when a homeowner receives an invoice from a contractor, which includes payment to subcontractors, there's a conditional waiver included, and you're saying that the homeowner has to say, okay, I'll pay you this, but only if you – do they get the unconditional waiver first, or do they have to make the payment first?
No, because generally what the protocol that happens on this is that the general contractor either knocks on the door or sends the invoice to them, and they get that theoretically with a package of conditional waivers and releases, and they issue a single check to the general contractor. Now, the best way to really protect themselves is to issue a joint check, which says contractor A and contractor B. I mean, it has to be and with no signs in between, so that both people have to sign the check. And that should be a part of their construction contract. And the better contractors, they don't mind doing that, because they know they're going to get their money. And, everybody needs to get profit out of these situations, too. I mean, not all free work. So the contractors do know what to do. The good ones do. The bad ones, they say, well, you know what, we don't collect those kind of forms. They're just not needed.
Yeah.
I'm going to pay the guy. Don't worry about it. And they do. Generally what happens is they go along and they pay, and then all of a sudden they don't, and the subcontractor, who may or may not have worked for him for a while, goes, hey, where's my money? And the contractor says, hey, she hasn't paid me or he hasn't paid me. And they get an extra 2 or 3 weeks out of it and an extra 2 or 3 invoices out of it. And then the homeowner stuck paying a subcontractor for a bunch of work they never got paid for.
And if it's just a short period of time, short window, you're not. It's not going to be like $50,000, is it?
Oh, sure. It will be.
It could
definitely
be?
Will be.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. If a stucco subcontractor goes out and, you know, it's a 3-coat system and it, you put on the lath is put on and then the scratch brown and color coats, those take time to cure. They have to be inspected. And so bad contractors tell the subcontractor, you'll get paid when the color coat is approved. So the homeowner gives the approval, pays for everything, and the general contractor takes off, and the subcontractor does $50,000, $75,000 worth of work and hadn't gotten paid.
In your example, in giving a joint check to ensure that both parties have to sign, you said, you know, contractor A and contractor B. Now, what if there's 3 or 4 subcontractors?
Well, you make it out, you know, contractor A and B, and then you make contractor A and C, contractor A and D. So you'd have 3 separate checks.
Oh, I love it.
And that's the way you protect yourself, because if the contractor, the subcontractor and the contractor give you their invoices, which typical good contracting practice would mandate, you know what the subcontractor is entitled to. And the general contractor is entitled to the profit he makes off of the subcontractor, the overhead profit, which is typically 15 to 20%.
Right. Now, with guys that are local, that have stellar records, is this the way they would traditionally have a homeowner write a check?
Sure. Those guys aren't afraid of that. It's part of the contract. And when the homeowner, if you're spending over $50,000 on a construction project, you'd better have a very nice contract with that person. And payment terms are listed out there. There's no reason not to have joint checks if you want it as a homeowner. So why not do it that way?
You know,
it allows you to protect yourself.
Right. And, you know, if someone is going to do a major remodel or a major rebuild and they get, let's say, they have a contract and they before they sign it, they contact you to review it, what is that going to cost them?
Well, about $100, $150.
You're kidding. That's all?
It's about a half an hour of my time. I mean, I know what I want to see in these contracts, so I'm not recreating the wheel. I mean, if I'm writing if a homeowner comes to me and says, okay, I'm going to be the owner-builder of this project, and I need you to draft up agreements for each of the trades, that's going to take longer than if they come to me and say, hey, Bart, this contractor X just gave me this agreement. What do you think? And literally, it takes me half hour, 45 minutes at most to sit there and review the contract and give them a written assessment of what and they're entitled to that. They should ask, if they're meeting with an attorney to review a contract, they should ask for a written opinion. Because otherwise, the attorneys, there's bad attorneys out there too. The bad attorney's going to go, this is a good contract. And it turns out to be absolutely horrible. Who said it was good? I never said it was good.
Right. So you get it in writing. So you recap, you make suggestions on what should be added to
right.
cover loopholes. And so maybe worst case, it's an hour, but it could be less. And what's the best number to reach you?
805-965-4191.
And can people call you Barton, or do you insist on Bart?
In any way they want. As long as they pay their bills, I'm always happy to see them.
Mr. Merrill.
Which is a joke. That's my joke.
Yeah, I know it's a joke. Mr. Merrill. Well, you know what? This has been a great segment. If you could hang on for about another 10 minutes, I want to take a commercial break and
sure.
come back and talk a little bit more about the underinsured. Because I can't remember the last time I mentioned that topic, and it's almost like I should mention it every week, because I am just really saddened to hear how many people were that much underinsured, and also a couple of comments you had to say about the fast track on county rebuilding. My guest, Bart Merrill, or Barton Merrill, I guess, but you don't charge people twice. There's one guy, Bart Merrill.
They just get one bill.
He's a Santa Barbara construction business and real estate attorney here in Santa Barbara. So we'll take a quick break and come back with more. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.